Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm going to pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Welcome back. Second half of the Tom Abraham Show. No, not the big dog, nor a drum major. Many times a drummer, but never a drum major. It's Tony Mack here, carrying you guys all the way to Six Bells today and for the rest of the week. Big Dog still out of town with the Junkyard Babe, celebrating 37 years together. Now, obviously, college football, still not back on the field yet. We're counting down the days, staring at the calendar, staring at our clocks, praying that it gets here. While we really have nothing on the field to talk about other than hypotheticals, there's a lot of other things going on as far as like rule changes and possible realignment going on. And in here to help us talk about that is Matt Scalise of AL.com. He joins us now. Matt, welcome in, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
I'm doing fantastic today, man. I wish it could have been a little prettier. It rained my entire drive here, so it's really humid outside, and humid weather is the weather I hate the most. So,
yeah, it's not great for the old sinus. It's definitely buggy down here in Birmingham too today.
Yeah, I can only imagine. All right, so I've noticed so many things going on right now. One of them, the biggest thing, is the conversation of conference realignment. As far as the league higher ups in the NCAA, they say it's kind of died down. They really aren't discussing it, but there's a lot of media talk, at least, about something pretty big that could happen in regards to that as soon as 22 or 2023 when the TV contracts run up. Walk us through why that's a possibility in the next 6 to 10 years and what kind of realignment can happen.
Well, conference realignment, really, just like the last round of it, it all comes down to money. That's what drives these things.
Right.
It's nothing to do with, fit, no matter what kind of the official line out of every conference is. It doesn't have to do with academics. It doesn't have to do with cultural fit. It's about making sure that the teams in your league make as much money as possible. And I think what we're starting to see is there's some inequity between the conferences when it comes to how much money they're capable of making right now with their various TV deals and rights packages. And really the leagues that I think have started to rise to the top are the Big Ten and the SEC. And the ones that are falling behind are the Pac-12 and the Big 12. And the ACC is kind of in the middle. It's kind of unclear which way that's going to go. They have a new TV setup that's starting to come into effect. We'll see how that goes for them. I think what a lot of people are looking at right now is reading the tea leaves, and yes, there's no direct conversations going on right now. That doesn't mean that the folks in charge of these leagues are not having backroom conversations and strategic plans in place. You know, when things ultimately go down, I think it will have been something that's been talked about and planned for years. I think you look at vulnerabilities right now, and the Big 12 is the one that most people talk about, because not only is it just not in a great position in terms of the TV rights deals that they have, but a lot of the schools within that league are, I think we're starting to see, it's a very, very top-heavy league. There are basically only a small number of programs that make up the vast majority of the draw power of that league when it comes to TV and other media audiences. And that doesn't spell great long-term success, I think. And so, you know, you have other leagues, I think the Big Ten and the SEC especially, looking at the possibilities of if this thing was to fall apart, if the next round of TV negotiations are disappointing for this league, and every school looked at where things are going and the direction things are trending, and they say, you know what, I think it's time for us to get out because we don't want to commit falling further behind. I think the SEC would probably make sure that they benefited from such a falling out.
Yeah, and you mentioned that out of all these conferences, the Big 12 seems really top-heavy. I'm actually an Oklahoma fan, Oklahoma guy, and that conference is anchored by pretty much two teams. I mean, I know Oklahoma State's doing okay, but it's anchored by Oklahoma and Texas, and Oklahoma could essentially be that first domino to fall, and that would be a huge domino, especially in terms of what the Big 12, but also even just bringing it to the SEC. And I know there's a lot of talks going on around super conferences, and that those talks have gotten bigger and bigger. If Oklahoma were to go to the SEC and potentially bring someone like Oklahoma State, would that be the team they brought with them? And how big of a step in terms of making it towards a couple super team conferences, super power conferences, would that be?
You know, I don't know enough about Oklahoma politics to speak with any authority on this, but I think the way that it works in both states, you know, they try to take care of their big state schools. They try to make sure that they don't get left behind. And I think that in the case of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State would probably get a lot of discussion if Oklahoma was to leave the Big 12 and go to a different conference, because there are folks associated with that university that are probably involved in state government and a lot of other, you know, influential bodies at Oklahoma that would say, look, we need to make sure that both of our major state institutions are in a good position here going forward. So I think that's probably where you'd look, and I don't think it's a bad fit. I think both of them would actually fit in quite well in the SEC, and you look at the way Missouri and Texas A&M so far, I think there's still some adjusting happening, but I think Oklahoma and Oklahoma State could
start.
There you are. Not too long ago was also a conference opponent of those schools. So I think you look at what an SEC division would look like that had that many former Big 12 schools in it. It makes a lot of sense, and I think LSU fits in well with those schools regionally and culturally. You know, the Mississippi schools probably wouldn't be too crazy about it, but I think they've never been the most powerful players in the SEC to begin with. So I think if that were to happen, I do think that it would make some sense, and I think that they wouldn't have that hard of a time fitting in and adjusting. And I think it would be a great draw for the conference. They're two programs that have a history of success in multiple sports. And I think especially in Oklahoma's case, there's a great deal of just name brand recognition and, you know, automatic TV draw.
Yeah, you mentioned Oklahoma draws TV, and but they also bring a big, huge tradition. They're going to bring a lot of revenue to an already really rich conference. And Oklahoma State also brings, like, this really interesting venue in Stillwater, and there's Bedlam there, and the stadium's almost like Cameron Indoor in basketball for Duke. It's just so close to the field. They both bring something really interesting on and off the field. So it would be a fantastic fit. Now, I don't want to spend too much more time on the Big 12, but if this move were to happen, I feel like the Big 12 could potentially just crumple and wither away. But even if it doesn't, you have to imagine that Texas is gone if Oklahoma leaves. Where would Texas go, and the potential suitor for Texas, how willing are they going to be to work with that Longhorn network they got?
I mean, that's the big question here. I think that Texas fancies itself as a big enough deal that I wonder if they wouldn't, I suspect there's already been conversations probably around the last expansion wave of Texas being an independent, and how would that work, and would it be financially viable for them? You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think that the Longhorn Network is in better position right now than it was a couple of years ago. The SEC Network actually had a lot to do with kind of turning the face of the Longhorn Network. They got them into a lot more homes when the SEC Network negotiations were happening. So I think if they ultimately decided that they needed to be in a conference. I think that Texas, you know, in the absence of a Big 12, probably the best fit you're going to see them gravitate towards be the Pac-12. And it would be awkward, but I guess you've got the Arizona schools over there. You know, you've got a lot of traditional powerhouse programs on the West Coast like USC and UCLA that I think Texas use as kind of their peers. But Texas, if that happened, Texas would have to treat themselves like a national brand. They really would have to kind of conduct themselves the way that Notre Dame has over the years. And you're not a, you know, college football is becoming less of a regional game anyway and more of a national thing. That's happened even with Alabama, even with schools in the SEC that play these big out-of-conference games at neutral sites all over the country these days. So, look, the people that are going to have the hardest time with all of this, if and when this ever goes down, are the fans. They're going to have to pay so much more money to get to see their teams play in person. But, you know, the fans that go to the game have probably been a secondary consideration for college football for quite some time now. That's not who these schools are thinking of when they make these decisions these days.
Right, and I understand when we did the whole realignment thing 5 years ago, that the five-year anniversary just crept up, I believe, when we did this whole thing 5 years ago. A lot of these schools were pulled because of good TV markets they had, particularly some of the schools that were brought into the Big Ten and Rutgers. Now, this time around, I'm so confused with the whole TV thing because I figured we could have the technology to include the streaming services and however many viewers they get watching it on a stream. I figured they could put that into the ratings, but they obviously can't. Does the competition of streaming have any play on any of this? It's just something I never really have a big grasp on.
You know, it's not so much of an issue of competition or ratings even. You know, look, nobody – I think that the SEC likes the idea of a lot of people watching their games on CBS and on ESPN.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no ratings for the SEC network, and they don't care. They're not concerned about ratings for that network right now. It's about getting into homes and getting on to cable networks and satellite subscribers. And if you can get into enough homes, you can sell advertising and you get subscription money. That's the way the model has worked years and years and years. That's how ESPN grew to become such a massive company. And I think when it comes to the internet and streaming technology, what that's going to do to all of this is it's going to essentially change the way that the value of these rights deals is calculated. It's going to change the way that lawyers and representatives add up the value of the SEC or the Big 12 or the Pac-12 media rights when it comes time to do contract negotiations. And that's why we're looking down the road at 2023 and years like that, because ultimately what happens in the interim, what happens with technology evolving year to year, none of it matters in the moment because
right.
These deals are locked in place for years at a time. But what matters is that when the next contract rolls up, you know, the landscape looks different. And if it looks different enough, it's going to have an effect on how much money these TV networks are willing to offer to these conferences, and it's going to have an effect on how much conferences are going to ask from the TV networks. Eventually, what's going to happen one day, and who knows which league, we'll have another situation like we had with the Big East, which is what started all of this. The Big East, you know, went to their schools and they added everything up and they said, here's how much money we think we need to get. And they took that figure around to the TV networks and nobody was having it. Nobody wanted to pay that. And that's pretty much was the end of the Big East. And eventually one of these leagues is gonna go around and start making negotiations, and they're going to find that they're not going to get the amount of money that they, as individual schools, think they deserve to get. And that will be the end of that conference.
Wow, that's fantastic insight. That actually helps explain a lot of questions that I'd had not written down. But moving on to something that the big guys in the NCAA are actually considering. They're at least in the idea stage of. They're kind of, like you mentioned earlier, not on the table talking about expansion right now, but it might actually happen. The NCAA is in the idea stage right now of new rules regarding transfer rules and scholarship releases. One of these ideas is that an athlete would now be allowed to be offered a scholarship from the school he wants to transfer to without actually having to be released from the scholarship at his current school. There's no proposal yet. They're just getting feedback from member schools right now. But how much resistance is there to be expected in the feedback from these members?
Well, I don't think coaches are going to be happy about it.
Right.
I think there you know, are reasons as a coach that you could look at this as both a positive and a negative for you. It's going to be a lot easier for you to recruit, essentially, you know, where even though you're not supposed to tampering with players who are at other schools, but we all know that happens behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, you're going to have a bit of a Wild West situation in terms of players already being out of school and becoming sort of free agents to go to a different school if they don't like the playing time they're getting, or maybe they don't even like the on-field success of the program that they're at right now, and they want to go somewhere where they can win. I think that probably what's going to happen is you're going to have a movement of coaches opposing this. You know, to me, when I look at this, the primary beneficiary of it is the players. The players obviously would benefit from having the ability to change schools whenever they want without mm-hmm. a coach blocking it. But ultimately, the schools make the decisions here, and I think the coaches are going to be certainly, I would think, telling their university presidents and athletic directors, we don't want this. This is going to be crazy. It's going to be unreliable. We're not going to have any idea from year to year what our roster is going to look like. We can't control it. And coaches want to be in control. So I would be surprised if this gets an okay from the coaches, unless there are just way more coaches than I'm aware that view themselves as being potentially able to benefit from this.
Now, explain to me the new grad transfer scholarship rule that's also in the idea stage. I think I understand it to where they're going to possibly propose a grad transfer scholarship to be worth double what a normal scholarship's worth. Now, what's the idea behind that?
You know, I think some of it is a movement towards the possible future of compensating the players a little bit more.
Mm.
But, you know, the way you justify it is you're saying that, you know, grad school is more expensive than undergraduate education, so we should be able to consider the value of this.
Did we lose him?
No, I'm still here. Sorry.
Okay, I think my headphones came out for a second, and I put them in, and you were gone. But I did get the gist of the majority of what you said there. The NCAA also would like to get all the conferences on the same page as close as they can as far as transfer rules go. I know that the SEC is a little more strict than others when it comes to transfers. So when proposing that, would we see the SEC kind of lighten up on those rules and become more like the other conferences, or the other way around? Would the other conferences try to tighten down on that?
You know, I think the SEC is very paranoid right now, probably more so than it's been for a long time. The coaches are fearful of their own jobs, I think, and I think they're, you know, this is what happens when one team wins a high percentage of conference titles for so long, is all the other coaches are a little bit more under pressure and a little bit more under fire from their fans and their alumni. So there's more paranoia. There's less trust between coaches. They view everything in terms of, you know, these guys are trying to hurt me. They're trying to take me down.
Right.
So I think ultimately the SEC probably should lighten up a little bit on some of these rules. I think as much as the coaches are still ultimately in charge of college football, at a certain point, we have to give student athletes, as much as we talk about the concern for the student athlete and his well-being, we have to actually take some action to show that might actually be the truth. You know, right now, when we have so many stories every year of kids having their potential transfers blocked by head coaches for no real good reason, it's hard to listen to them sort of pretend that they have the athlete's best interest at heart and not competitive advantage as their primary concern.
Yeah, that's a good point. Matt Scalise, AL.com, here with us. If there's enough interest from the member schools, how quickly could we see these rules actually be proposed? And after they're proposed, how long until they're put into place if voted in?
We're still probably talking about next offseason would be the soonest that this could happen. I think past the time where that can happen this offseason. So, you know, this is not going to affect 2017. I think we could be talking about it possibly coming into effect in 2018 or maybe even after that.
Okay. Now, my last question I have for you here is it's off the topic of rules. It's something that happened to the Vanderbilt football players. Now, two of them got shot trying to retrieve a stolen phone from one of their teammates. Explain to me this entire bizarre situation, if you can, because after, you know, it was just an ill-advised plan. One of them, I think, brought a pellet pistol just as kind of an intimidation factor. I don't think they had any kind of malicious intent behind any of this. I think they just wanted the phone back and were willing to intimidate to get it. As far as I understand the situation, they ended up getting suspended. Am I missing anything here? And what is the I guess, intention of suspending them? Like, why exactly did that happen? I didn't think it was too harsh enough for them to get suspended.
I mean, I think it was pretty clearly some bad judgment being used.
Yeah,
that's
probably
where the suspension is coming from. If nothing else, bringing even something that looked like a gun
right.
to a situation like this is not a good idea. because a lot of folks, in many, many situations, if you even bring a pellet gun, you know, the law can treat that as the same as bringing an actual firearm to something.
Right.
Because if the other guy thinks you have a gun, they're going to react in a certain way. I think there was some extraordinarily bad decision-making going on in this situation. Thankfully, nobody was hurt, at least not seriously. And I think these guys hopefully will learn from this and straighten out. Vanderbilt has had an unfortunately high number bad off-field incidents in recent years.
Yeah.
And it's very surprising. You know, it's a school that has such high academic standards, and they really, for a very long time, promoted a pretty, you know, pretty responsible culture there. I really don't want to put any of this on Derek Mason. I hate to try to assign blame in any of this, but I think you can look at the previous coaching staff and say maybe the fact that they were sort of recruiting some unconventional types of players for Vanderbilt might have led to a little bit of a culture change. And Derek Mason's not a guy that seems like he's willing to put up with a lot of off-field shenanigans. I hope for his sake he's able to get it under control pretty soon. I think he's from the guys that he's recruiting, I think once he gets a roster that's more entirely built by him, this stuff will probably start to go away.
Well, Matt, we certainly appreciate having you on here. The Big Dog will be back next week, so you hear from him. But we look forward to hearing from you next week, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Matt Scalise, AL.com. I'm so glad he was able to come on because he really broke down. I mean, he gave us some more insight on the rules, and I could have talked about that, but he's got a better insight on those, the rule changes. But I really needed someone to kind of talk to me about how the whole streaming thing holds up, and that's a great point. About as far as renegotiating the next TV contract. Because I kind of feel like the schools are in power there because you pretty much got what the schools bring to offer or what the schools bring to the table, what they have to offer, and the fact that, well, people want to see us in our conference so bad. They're not just watching us on TV. They're watching us on the go. They've got to see us on their phones and everything, so we deserve the money. And it's going to be interesting. I feel like the schools have all the power in that situation. So, a lot of interesting things to happen. The conference realignment. I'm in favor of Oklahoma going to the SEC. Better competition. I ultimately think that the recruiting is going to be much better. I know Lincoln's doing the best he can. Oklahoma doesn't have much to offer as far as the state goes. There's nothing around, but just the name of the SEC is going to be enough. They're a historical program. They bring a great tradition of winning. But just that SEC logo on there and the fact that they're going up, they might not, you know, be in the best party place, but they're going to compete against the best every single week. And a lot of players like that.
Yeah. And Oklahoma, I mean, especially now with Baker Mayfield coming back, and I feel like they have the pieces to compete in the SEC.
Well, Baker Mayfield will only be here this year, and we're talking about later on down the road. But I think what Lincoln Riley is bringing and as far as the offense, I think you can see an offense that can compete in the SEC. And you, certainly historically, when Bob Stoops first got there, he had defenses that could compete in the SEC because he had some of the best defenses in the country at the time. Like, the reason he went to so many championships early in his career was because of how tough his defense was. He had the best defense in the nation in 2000 when they won the national championship. Also, a bunch of really good defenses. Oklahoma wasn't known for
a high-powered offense until basically around 2008 when Bradford got there, or Bradford's second year, his Heisman-winning trophy year. He throws for almost 5,000 yards, has 2,000-yard running backs behind him. That's really when they got their name. And it all started because of Mike Leach. Mike Leach started it, and Oklahoma kind of threw together the no-huddle and a really fast no-huddle offense to kind of compete with that. And that's where it comes from. But if they can get back defensively, I think Lincoln Riley's going to have an offense to compete in the SEC, because what you see a lot is mobile quarterbacks that really kill big-time defenses like Alabama and LSU, and Hurts has been killing everybody in the SEC with his legs. And although Mayfield's not the best athletically, he's not the future. He's about to be a senior. They've got Kyler Murray, who was at A&M under Mike Stoops, or I mean under Lincoln Riley. He's going to be even better, I think, and I think that's the kind of athlete he can produce. I think he can produce an offense that can compete for a long time in the SEC, so I'd look forward to that if that actually happens, and the fact that Oklahoma State will be brought along as well. All right, when we come back, we got phone lines open the rest of the way. Get in. I'm going to bring up the questions I asked a second ago in the next segment. 866-485-9867, or you can get in on Twitter, at TonyMacUMP, or at Tom Abraham Show. We'll be back right after this. Sports Radio 730, 1039, The Yonk. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. Really weird computer glitching again. It's all good, though. That was, I don't know if you were going to guess it by just the intro of the song, really smooth, but that was When a Man Loves a Woman, the Michael Bolton edition. That album came out also in 91. Now, I don't care what you say about the song, or I can't believe you're playing that on here. That's a great song. Man, I'm just a guy that loves all kinds of music. That's a fantastic song. All right. Call me weird if you want. It's okay. All right. So I posed a couple questions earlier. And now that we have open lines the rest of the way, we can get in on this, okay? Pick one player from the rest of the country that you would like to see come play in the SEC. Now, that could be because you like him, because you don't like him, you want to see him, you know, fail. A guy you're not sure of, you want to see what he's made of to come over there. He shows flashes of being really good, but he might just be benefiting from his own conference, you know what I mean? You could even take it further. You could take one guy from every conference. You can take one offensive and one defensive guy from every conference. How in-depth you want to get with it, that's fine. You can call in 866-485-9867 to get in and talk to me directly about it, or you can just get in on Twitter, at TonyMacUMP. Kareem, do you have a guy in mind?
Yeah, for the offensive player heading to transfer to the SEC.
Doesn't have to be offensive, but any player that's not in the SEC, you'd like to see in the SEC.
I went with Quentin Flowers, the quarterback from
South Florida.
From South Florida. Because I feel like he's just kind of a product of his conference.
Oh, so you want to see?
I want to see how he would do. I want to see how he would do in the SEC against going up some actual defenses. I'm going to say it.
Well, I mean, that's, I guess it's fair to say. I mean, but I was thinking more along the lines of like a Power Five thing, because you don't necessarily expect guys like the guys from South Florida. You can probably expect them to have a really good game or two against a big program.
Yeah,
because you know it's a one time thing. But I don't think you would expect guys from non-Power 5 conferences or like guys from South Florida to come in and dominate a conference like that. I mean, they're not a division, or they're not a Power 5 recruit kind of for a reason. You know what I mean?
Well, I did have a second player in mind. That'd be Saquon Barkley from Penn State.
And why Saquon Barkley? He's a good running back.
Yeah, he's a great running back. But I want to see how compared to SEC defenses, like Alabama's, LSU's, Auburn's, I want to see how he would hold up. Well, just kind of in the back of my mind, I was just kind of curious.
How do you think he would stack up?
I feel like he would stack up fairly well, because when he was playing at Penn State, he did go up against some great defense.
He did. He went up against a fantastic Michigan defense, but I mean, Michigan did throttle Penn State, if I'm not mistaken.
They did throttle Penn State,
but he's a two-time 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah.
1,076 yards as a freshman, 1,496. He just seems to be getting better. He's not a small guy. He's 5'11". He's my height, but he's 223 pounds. He's a stout guy. I think he'd be okay.
Yeah.
He's quick.
He would hold his own.
I absolutely think he would. I don't know how else I'm going to be able to gauge like a superstar coming over to the SEC or anything. But I can guess I can give you my take on the players I would pick here in just a little bit. But first, I'm going to get into the other question, and it was, would you give up a football national championship to see your team win one in basketball and baseball? And this was posed. This question was posed by AL.com. It was a great question. You are guaranteed, absolutely guaranteed. They upped the ante because this was asked a while back. Like, would you give up a football national championship this year or the next 5 years if your basketball team was guaranteed to win a national championship? And that's tough. Yeah. This one seems to be a little easier for certain schools because it's guaranteed a baseball and basketball national championship in 3 to 5 years. You get both within 3 to 5 years, but your football program won't win a championship.
Yeah.
Now, teams like Alabama, I absolutely think you should go yes on this.
Yes.
But just think about all that comes with. 5 years of Saban not winning a national championship. That's obviously going to peg him down a little bit as far as the public perception just because we know how great he's been. And then all of a sudden, 5 straight years, he can't get there, he can't win one. I mean, that could kind of hurt his legacy a little bit, I guess. But at the same time, you do something that you've never done in any other sport. I think Bama's made it to the final in college baseball twice back in the day, and they lost both of them. So they never won there, and they've never even been to a Final Four in basketball, them nor Auburn. They've both made it to the Elite Eight. And I think with the situation you have at Alabama, you got Nick Saban, who's just been dominant. Like we said, his legacy could probably take a hit. You don't win a championship in 5 years after you've just won so many in your first 10. Look at your basketball situation. You've got a fantastic head coach coming in, a guy who's done an incredible job with really not much to work with the past couple of years, and he's got a great recruiting class coming in Avery Johnson, as who I'm talking about at Alabama. I think he's a real deal, could win a national championship guy. He's definitely going to get you to the tournament, I believe, as soon as this year. And then he's going to – I think he can make some deep runs. So you've got that going for you. Just the shape that Alabama's athletic program's already in, I think I would take that deal because you can look at them as now you're transitioning from just Saban. And you've got Saban in your back pocket. I know he hasn't won in 5 years, but, hey, he's won all these championships before. So – you know, there's potential he could do this again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we got him in our back pocket. We got the greatest coach of all time who's in a 5-year slump, but he can come back at any time.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you got Avery Johnson winning a national championship, and you got, I can't remember the new, Brad Bohannon winning a national championship in baseball. Yeah, give me that any day of the week, because now you go from dominating in football and from like kind of on the rise in basketball and trying to get back to former glory in baseball to dominating or to at least being very successful in all three sports. You go from just, you transcend from being a dominant football program to now just owning all sports or being competitive in all sports. You go from a dynasty in football to the most powerful program, the most powerful school, the most powerful university in sports. So if I'm Alabama, give me that deal every day of the week.
You take losing maybe one or two extra football national championships to have just a well-rounded, extremely versatile athletic program.
Now, what if you're Auburn, though? Do you take that if you're Auburn?
Well, Auburn already has a pretty solid baseball program. They're by no means terrible. Definitely way better than Bama. But I would think twice about taking that deal.
Go on. I agree with you so far. Go on.
Because now, I'm not entirely up to date on Auburn basketball, but kind of how the SEC is in basketball generally, it's usually just Kentucky and everyone else.
And that's starting to change, obviously, with what
Arkansas started to show some promise.
South Carolina did in the tournament,
South Carolina,
obviously,
for sure.
But they do lose Sindarius Thornwell, pretty much the catalyst there. But, I mean, a lot of momentum there. There's a lot of head coaches moving into the SEC in basketball in the last few years that have made that conference that much better. I mean, at Tennessee, you got Rick Barnes, and then you've got Bruce Pearl at Auburn, and they're on the up and up. If I'm Auburn, I wouldn't take the deal just because you're not as successful in football, and you're in they're in this. And I know there's a lot of other programs out there that aren't that successful in football as far as national championships go. They're a successful football program, but look who they're compared to every day. It's not the SEC is all compared to Bama because they play with Bama, but Auburn's in the same state. They're the biggest rival that because of Nick Saban and a couple of really lucky plays by Auburn that stand out as some of the most exciting in football history. Yeah. That is now looked at as probably the best rivalry in football now, besides maybe Michigan and Ohio State.
With Auburn, it's not that they're bad. It's not like they're the scum of the SEC. It's that they're somewhere caught in the middle.
Well, no. Let me finish my point. I was still going there, and that's that you're more so than anybody else. You're compared to Alabama because you're in state with them, and the rivalry's been brought to the biggest spotlight ever because of the two wins you've had in the past few years over Saban have been that spectacular. You can't risk 5 years without a football national championship, especially if you take this deal and Alabama doesn't. They're winning that many more national championships than you. It's still in that funk. When you get out of that 5-year deal, I guess you've got your baseball program and your basketball program. They each have a championship. Fantastic, that's awesome. Yeah. But where's your football? You got to think about where your football program would be at that time. Gus Malzahn probably out of a job. 5 more years not competing for a national championship. He's out. Who's the next guy in? Are you really going to get a guy that's going to be that successful? Because Saban's probably still there winning national championships. So I would be reluctant to take that deal if I were Auburn too.
Wait, can I answer the question a little bit?
No, but what's your idea?
I was thinking. Now, with the 5 years of not winning national championship, does that also include not making the playoffs?
No, I don't think so. It just says you can't win a national championship in football. You could probably still make the playoffs. So I see what you're saying, but even making the playoffs, I see what you're saying. If Gus Malzahn can actually make the playoffs, then they might still have him there. But I still think 5 years of not being – there's no way Gus Malzahn beats Saban 5 years in a row. So, I mean, he's still going to have some losses there. And then actually getting past Alabama over that hump and getting to the playoff and not being able to win, it's going to hurt you too. So I'm very reluctant to take that deal if I'm Auburn. I'm not reluctant, however, to get this guest in here because he's a fantastic guy that calls all the time. Garrett is calling in from Huntsville. Garrett, what's up, man?
Wow, such kind words for me. I appreciate that.
No problem, man. Absolutely. Like I've mentioned several times, all of Tom's listeners really treat me well, and you're definitely at the top of the list as far as that goes. But are you calling in about the deal? Would you give up a football national championship for 5 years to have your baseball and basketball program each win one?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
No.
What school are you speaking for?
Number one, the only moneymakers in college athletics are football and basketball. Really, it's football. And some football programs don't even turn a profit. So the majority of the time, you're athletic, other than football, aren't turning a profit. So in order for that athletic program to make money and continue all those other sports, is for the football program to be successful. And whether that's having a winning record, whether that's making the playoffs or national championship on any level, especially at D1. So if you're able to have continued success at the top level with football, you're able to that benefits other athletic programs, not only just for football, but baseball, women's gymnastics, right, or golf programs, all of those secondary sports, if you will. So no, I would. I mean, it would be great if Alabama could win. I mean, they obviously are very successful in gymnastics and golf, but what about the rowing team? You know, if they win a national championship, that's not in the headlines. You and I aren't talking about it. Tom's not going to talk about, you know, the Auburn. You name it, pick a sport, Auburn wrestling. If men's team wins a national championship, we're not talking about that. We're talking college football, period.
Yeah, and Garrett, thank you for the call. I got to cut it short just because we got to go to a break. But I'm gonna expand on that. You're exactly right, especially in terms of the SEC, because, I mean, they even have the slogan, it matters. I mean, it just means more. But, I mean, the spotlight is so heavy on them now, and especially in the sport of football, that I don't think you can risk that. And also, actually, it's interesting you brought up the financial aspect of it, and I had read some of this a couple weeks ago, is that I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think there's only one baseball program in the SEC that actually turns profit, and that's LSU. And I think there's a couple others that might have broken even. But, I mean, he's exactly right. They don't turn a profit, and some of them are kind of negative, but they being in the SEC, they've got football programs that bring in so much money that covers that. It covers it for them. So all of this success, a lot of the success in the SEC of athletics rides on football programs. He's exactly right. That's a fantastic point there. We're going to get a quick break. We'll come back and we'll break down. We'll go into that a little more. I got a couple other things to talk about, and then we'll get back to the players I might bring over into the SEC. But none of that happens first without a break. This is the Tom Abraham Show, hosted by yours truly, Tony Mack, right here on Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Yeah. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. That's right. Van Halen also made an appearance. Best album, 1991. There's Right Now. I'm telling you, man, I was born at a fantastic time for music. I mean, I wasn't born until the end of the year. All that music came out before I was born, but, I mean, hey, that's okay. You're darn right it counts, Cream. No, you know, you're damn right it counts, Cream.
Oh.
Yeah.
A little stronger language.
Yeah, I'm throwing out some of the tiny cuss words I'm allowed to say on the air, spaced out from time to time. Yeah.
A little more respect for you, though. I'll give you that.
I was agreeing with you. You shouldn't feel hurt.
No, a little more respect for you, though. I'll give you that.
Feel free to call in, text in. Well, no texting. I'm sorry. I don't have the range to the text line here, but call in, tweet in, 866-485-9867 at Tony Mack UMP. In the next segment, we'll take all your phone calls and your tweets. Again, one player from the rest of the country that you'd like to see play in the SEC, I'll give you mine coming up, and I'd love to hear Cole's, because I do have a defensive guy. I'd love to hear what Cole has to say about him, so I'll probably tweet at him and get his opinion on that. But following him, Alasis tweets in, and he has a pretty good list. He said he'd like to see Sam Darnold and Jake Browning in the SEC. We kind of saw what Jake Browning could do against Alabama. I mean, he wasn't awful.
Yeah.
He definitely didn't play bad, and he played against the best of the SEC. So I actually think that that's a good one, because I think he could have some success. He's not necessarily a roll out of the pocket, I can get out and beat you with my legs all the time guy, but I think he can make plays with his legs. Sam Darnold, you know, as accurate as he can be, I think he would be successful. But you'd have to have a market for that. I mean, an offense for that. Like maybe at LSU, a guy that they need to an accurate quarterback, because they've got a decent offense, and Denny Etling is just a mediocre quarterback. Maybe a guy at Sam Darnold going to LSU with just a laser arm like that would be pretty cool to see. I think he'd fare pretty well. I think we fared pretty well today, Cream. I mean, if I do say so myself, but I am not a critic of the show. So, I mean, that's up to them to decide. But we will be back whether we were good or not. We got one more hour to go. We'll be back. Phone lines open, like I said, open the rest of the way. We will have a rapid rerun for you today. This is the Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039. The Ump.